Are we recording, rolling?
Yes.
Okay, should we do the intro? All go right. No Hello intro. And welcome. Well, Dan, do you want to start?
No.
Okay, I'll start then.
Go on.
Hello and welcome to the Car Culture Podcast. We're here to take you behind the scene. So we're trying out that intro. With me today, as always, we have Mr. Daniel.
What do you want me to say?
Hello.
Hello.
There we go. And with him, we actually have our guest. Please introduce yourself, John from ZRT Motorsport.
Hello, everyone. My name's Jonathan. I started ZRT Motorsport, which is a grassroots motorsport team, probably around 7 years ago now. And we race exclusively in the NGK Touring Car Series and in the International FIA 24-hour series. We've raced Honda, Seat and Audi during that period.
So you've been racing for 7 years here. How long have you been in the region for?
16 years in the region. Started racing in autocross here.
Okay, okay.
In a Lancia Delta Integrale.
Yep.
Those have gone up in price now.
Yeah, unfortunately I sold mine. Yeah. then moved on from there to the local touring car series, and then from then to 24 hours series.
So local touring car series, that was when you first started racing 7 years ago?
Yes, actually it might be a little bit more than 7 years. I think, you know, 7 years, I started in a Honda EG. I actually got inspired because I went to the 1 year the V8 supercars were racing at Yas Marina.
I was at Yas because they did Autodrome as well, and I saw like Johnny Herbert and Jean Alesi. They were doing I remember that. They had their like superstars and the yes. locals.
I think they
as well.
Launched the Autodrome with that, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Now, the kind of preview race to it was the Touring Car Series here, which at that time was exclusively Honda and Renault, I think, also. There was even an Opel Kadett racing. So anyway, I watched this race and I said to myself, this time next year, I'm going to be in this race.
Because I'm guessing you're not from here. I can hear it as an Irish accent. So you came from Ireland, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then you came here without the intention of doing anything motorsport, or like did you catch the bug here?
I think I raced an Alpha 75 in Ireland before coming here, but that was at an extremely amateur level. I guess I stumbled into it here. I met one guy who I think you all know, Fadi Bakawi.
Yeah, no,
who then said, I know a friend of mine who tunes cars, you should bring your Lancia and get to know him, etc. And then from then it just went downhill. Pretty much.
You got the bug.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, just before we forget, we do have producer Ahmed on the ones and twos. We always forget Ahmed.
Most important person here, probably.
Ahmed.
Hello.
There he is, yeah. So, as we were saying, sorry just to deviate, but...
But yeah. What I like, though, is you got the bug here, which I think, like, it's harder, right? I mean, comparing to what goes on in Europe, I think motorsport is less accessible here, would you say? Like, or... Harder to get into, or?
I think, I mean, it is accessible. It is expensive, though, as a hobby.
Yeah. And that was like 16 years ago, you said, yeah? So that was a while ago.
Yeah, but certainly there are a lot more opportunities, I think, in Europe and in UK, because there's a lot more different types of racing.
And maybe different budget kind of caps.
Exactly.
Well,
you know,
right?
You can probably go racing in a Peugeot 106
somewhere
in the UK.
Just a roll cage and make it work, basically.
Yeah.
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 You know, there are different levels and different, and obviously that grassroots level appeals to a lot of people, especially young people getting into motorsport, and especially those who just want to do it for fun.
Well, I mean, it's like appeal, but also be able to attain, right? Because when you've not got much money, a Peugeot 106 is all you can afford, right?
Sure.
With a roll cage, make it safe, put some seatbelts in it, and that is where you start. But it doesn't seem to be the thing here. Maybe just because most of us have come as expats at a certain age and like income bracket to say, okay, fine.
It's a young place here, though, right? I don't think it's anything to do with...
So why is there not more grassroots motorsport here? Proper grassroots.
I mean, I think it's partly driven by safety. You know, the tracks here conform strictly to FIA standards. And in order to build a car to FIA standards, you have to spend...
It's not cheap, is it?
You have to spend money, you know, be it fuel cells, be it roll cages, seats, extinguishers, all of these things, it all adds up. So,
whereas like Sunday championship rallies or what are like, you know, local, county, whatever you want, blah, blah, blah.
We are banger racing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And even banger racing.
Exactly. If you see what they do in US with these bangers...
Yeah. 24 hours of Le Mans. Or lemons.
Lemons, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's good fun. Yeah. Which, again, like we were talking to another guest, Thad, stuff like that, it seems like it could work. But, again, us outside of motorsport, me specifically and also Thad, it feels like why has no one had that thought? But I think the second question...
I think people have had the thought here.
Exactly, so why has it not happened? Do you know what I mean?
It's strange. Like, we don't even have a regular autocross series now. We haven't had one for a long time, I think. I've been trying to think of how many years it is.
But I think autocross is kind of getting superseded by the time attack. I think there's more of an effort being put into that to push that as a series. And so I think that's admirable, to be honest.
Time attack's good here. We had Adnan on previously. But again, that's down to...
And he built a grassroots car. He got given a Honda Accord and was like, I'm going to make this work. Right.
But Time Attack has had this, I think it's favoured from this. I'm not saying it's not great. It is great, but there's nothing else going on. Again, before we used to have what is not EMSO? They were a different name before, governing body. They did a Time Attack, and then there was an amateur Time Attack that was run at the Autodrome as well, which was timed, that was creating an entry level fee. So for the Time Attack at Dubai Autodrome, which was ran by Yasser, you could enter any car as long as it wasn't a 4x4. You didn't have to have a race license. It was 250 dirhams or 300 dirhams. So no safety aspects to it at all in terms of, but you were on the track on your own, so you could take any road car there.
Well, there's probably just tech, right? Just look at the car, make sure.
Yeah, as long as the normal car's standard road tech, registered, exactly, it's fine, yeah. Right? And then there was the other level of time autocross, which was you had to have a national race license. The cars didn't, there was different categories, so they didn't have to have as much level of safeties, but there was still, it was more expensive. I think it's 1,500 dirhams or 1,200 dirhams to enter. So, you wouldn't just do it as a laugh at the weekend to try and get into it.
Yeah.
And I think we don't have any race series that kind of support that.
You mean a bottom rod of the ladder?
Yeah, how do I get into motorsports? Karting, karting's another prime example, right? That used to be, people would bring their own karts in their own trailers. Now, I don't know if you've seen it recently, the last 5 years, 4 years has been ex-F1 trailers that they're using now. They've got whole race teams and it's 200,000 dirhams a season, right? Mm-hmm. For kids racing karts, it's...
Everyone thinks they've got a baby Lewis Hamilton, basically.
Yeah, whereas in Europe, you'd have, again, different levels. You'd have that really cheap entry-level karting.
Don't think the local organisers here would want to encourage, the person who's just coming for a laugh, who's just rocking up for... you have to consider, there has been, unfortunately, in the past, one or two incidents that have happened here at racetracks of which, people have lost their lives. So you have to take safety as paramount in all respects. So you have to respect that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the car anyway. I just personally want to talk about the car. It's a Honda. You have a Honda. I've always wanted a Honda, never owned one. But I think the scale of yours, it reminds me of John Simmons' E30 as well, where it's there's not many race... Well, that's a bold statement, but I think personally... And I know you've shown me a lot of stuff in it as well. That it's had, I don't know if you would want to say how much money you've put into it or even think about it, but the amount of money you've got into it is a lot.
Let's take a step back. The car? Because I think quite a few people wouldn't know what the car we're talking about. So do you want to give us so you've built a car for a series, and it is a...
We have a Honda Integra DC5.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2006, which I think was the last... year they were built.
Is it right-hand drive?
Right-hand drive. Yeah. It's a Japan. It came from Japan.
Do you know how much it would be if it was stock now?
No.
Don't tell him.
It starts at $30,000 upwards.
Anyway.
But you can put that in the Lancia. It's
worth more to me than that.
Yeah, to be honest.
Yeah.
So okay. I had previously bought a fully prepared DC5. From one guy who drove it here locally. I raced it for a few years, and then we learned a lot with that car. So then when it came the time when it was kind of at the end of its racing career, shall we say, we then decided, okay, what do we do now? Do we buy a new Renault Clio, or do we build another DC5? And the point was I had so much spurs. I had more spurs than the works factory. So we decided... okay, let's take what we learned let's improve it and let's build a proper DC fan.
From like almost a body in white kind of platform and then everything else bolted on top.
So
right?
We took it right from a bare shell and we had Saluki Motorsport do the actual roll cage fabrications, and that was very much driven by the BTCC.
Yeah,
they were inspired a little bit by how
they
did it.
Raced them, right? They were Integra's in BTCC.
They won the championship in 2005, 2006.
Matt Neal?
Yes.
Yeah, hey, I see.
So we also learned the biggest problem with Hondas,
there's a few of them.
For those who take them on a racetrack, you'll learn is oil starvation.
Mm-hmm.
So we've often heard of many K20 engines going bang on turn three of the Dubai Autodrome or the bowl. So, and that also applies to atoms. It applies to anything that's running a K20.
Yeah.
So I did some research and found that in the BTCC days, they were not allowed to run dry sump because that's the obvious solution.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
So what they did, Neil Brown Engineering, who's very famous for building Honda Works engines. Incidentally, those engines at that time cost £32,000 each to build. So
that's almost a price for normal Integra these days.
Yeah.
Did you buy two?
I didn't buy any from him.
Okay.
But probably unfortunately. But so they fixed the problem by using AccuSump, which is basically a cylinder filled with oil, which when it gets a sensor from the ECU to say that oil pressure is dropping, it pumps additional oil into the engine and then withdraws it.
So it's not necessarily a dry sump, it just always makes sure there's flow.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd say it's almost the same.
But it's a fantastic solution, and since we installed it, never had an issue.
But so when you built the car, and how long did it take for you to get into 24-hour racing?
Well, we did 24 hours before that we built that car.
Okay.
That was the third time we did it. We did it previously in the old car, twice.
I remember you telling me you just brought two of everything for 24 hours.
Yeah, we had to. We had two sets of suspension, two sets of doors, bumpers, bonnets, lights, suspension arms, almost everything.
And this is not cheap, right?
It adds up, to be fair.
So
don't worry, there's like 30 people that listen to this. You can't.
I mean, the nice thing would be if now our type of car have all but disappeared from 24-hour racing. Maybe you'll still see
what kind of. So you mean just actually built home built race cars?
Yes, the grassroots guys. You know, when we did 24 hours in 2013, we were driving BMW diesel here in Dubai.
I remember that.
There was a diesel class.
Yeah.
And all of those disappeared, and then slowly but surely the Clios, the Integras, the anything which was in that kind of 2-liter bracket started to disappear.
Like the Golfs and stuff. I remember Phil used to have a Golf, right? Yeah.
Because it also became expensive. When we entered the 24 hours, the entry fee was around 4,500 euro. Now it's 13,000 euro.
What?
So it's become. And that's the lower level. Mm. You know, when you go up to the GT, it goes up to 17,000, 18,000 euro.
And then that's a series, though, because people fly in for that.
But yeah, it's one race.
That's one race.
Yeah. And what do you mean? Tires. I thought it was part of a series. No?
It's part of a series, but that's the entry 13, fee.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one race entry, right, for one round. And then you've got tyres as well.
So now it has, tyres you can budget 15,000 euro for a 24-hour race. Approximate, and the top guys.
Just so everyone else knows, like everyone else is wincing in the room, like genuinely wincing. Imagine the cars you can buy 15,000 euro.
The top guys who are driving, let's say Ferrari, Mercedes, this type of thing. I read that they are using up to 90 tires. So 90 tires at 300.
Wait,
euro
90.
300 euros a tire.
90.
Yeah.
What are they doing? Smoking them? What are you doing?
But 90 times. A lot more power, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Yeah, and you're running for 24 hours as
Plus
well.
Plus, they're changing a lot more regularly. Yeah. You know, we can run up to 2 hours. They cannot sustain the fuel to run for 2 hours with 100-litre fuel tanks.
And they're racing as well. So it's not about just finishing. It's about finishing first, right?
Yeah, some of these. I mean, when you get to the top end of that level of motorsport, the Kevin Estries of the world and they are really super
and
athletes.
They're like gentlemen with professional racing drivers on the same team, because you see gentlemen drivers with proper Porsche works drivers and Ferrari works drivers, and they fly them in for this stuff. And like, you're right, it's kind of a shame, because it goes, you get up here and you see this, right, and it's a stratosphere, Like, it's something that I don't think I'll be able to achieve at some point.
Here comes the marketing spiel.
But like down here and the rest of us are normal plebs, right? We could probably, as all of us, scrounge enough money for...
No, I wouldn't fucking do it.
Not for four seats. Like, can you get four people in a seat? Could you do...
Yeah, you
split the cost along...
It's four or five. It's going to be anywhere between two and five drivers. Two is insanity.
I was going to say two staff.
And five, you need to really be able to gel with each other. That's the only glitch. And sometimes... You bring in a driver who maybe you don't know, and that can be sometimes spoil it for everyone. You know, it has to be a team of which think the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's trying to be a hero. Everybody is working for the team, then you'll get through it. But if one person thinks they're gonna do something special,
everyone's Michael Schumacher, or they're Michael Schumacher,
then it's gonna be a disaster.
And let's say you have five drivers, typically. When you've been here, are you splitting the cost between five drivers?
Yeah.
Look, to race in TCR, if you want to go and race with, let's say, AC Motorsport or someone like that, reality is it's €15,000 for a drive. Upwards, maybe 17. And when you get up into the...
Mate, golf is so much cheaper.
Other stuff, maybe it's 25. You know.
And that's just for one 24-hour race?
Yes.
Yeah. So what inspired you to do a 24-hour?
What lunacy made you go, you know what, that's a good idea.
Listen, I've done 24-hour racing karting before, and that's tough.
I've done karting also, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
I really didn't enjoy it.
So, I'm not going to spend €15,000.
Yeah, okay, but when we did it, it wasn't so expensive, to be honest. Right.
But you did do you did last year. So
true. But I mean, in terms of putting a team together, the expense of... associated with that.
Okay.
So, and even at that time, we were charging a lot less, you know, in terms of drives.
Yeah.
But it was all about, you know, wanting to achieve it, wanting to do it, wanting to experience it.
It is quite a spectacle in Dubai.
It's an amazing, for me, it's the most amazing race you can watch here.
It is a circus. It's like the Circus Descent. It's great because it is drama and it's like the smell, the petrol, the tyres, everyone just sitting there.
It's the biggest thing
here.
That happens in the auto.
Yeah, so we've just walked down the paddock, but you've experienced
it. It is a unique experience, you know, and you do really feel an excitement around it. It does really inspire. And this is why, you know, if you go to it, I first went to it, I think, in 2012. And I remember at that time being able to walk through the pits, walk and watch everything. And you really got up close at first hand with all of the teams and all of... And if you're a petrol head, that's like a bit of heaven, you know?
And you can't do that in Europe. It's really funny because
absolutely.
The Dubai 24 hours...
This was the main difference for me where I couldn't believe how up close you could get. And then that's kind of where it started. That was the inspiration to eventually do it one day.
So is that the linchpin of your passion almost about motorsport now? It is kind of the Dubai 24 hours, because a few of us, it's like the big thing here. It's the big race here.
It excites me on the calendar, I think.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
it amazes me how many people don't know about it. You know, how many people I talk to and
there's
say,
quite a few people in the community
what,
that know
about
it.
What, is it 24 hours here? Yeah. What? So it needs more publicity for sure. And in saying that, in recent years, you can hardly get into it for the car park.
Yeah.
But it's the one event that's free to attend, you know, and has been for the last 11 years. If you can't go to Formula One for free.
And didn't Toto Wolff start it? Did Toto Wolff actually started, one of the first things he campaigned in was in the Dubai 24 Hours?
It
was
in the magazine, I think, right? He won it, actually.
Did he win it? Yeah, that's cool. Like, you've got proper names that have been involved in this over the years.
But it is a proper outfit. There's no, like... People aren't fucking around. It's
well, not for that
stuff.
Much money, not anymore.
Yeah.
We were on the podium in 2014 at the same time as Mika Salo. He was also in the race. So
yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
But it's...
And Sabine Schmidt.
Really?
Yeah, she drove a Nissan 370Z.
And made it on the podium?
No.
What kind of was it? A home built? Must be, right? Because
did a. It was. Nissan,
there's no GT3 370Z, was there?
It was.
They may have ran a car, you know.
That's what it was.
Okay.
And in the same year, Cora Schumacher was in the race, and she was on the podium in a BMW 320 diesel.
But if
or 330 diesel, sorry.
If you look at it from a race driver's point of view, right? So you live in Europe or America, a 24-hour race in Dubai is glamorous, right?
I think it has a lot of appeal to it. Yeah. You know, certainly at that time of year, Europe and UK is miserable. It's cold. It's wet. and there's a big attraction to come here and race.
And then it rains half the race and you well, do you get a discount? Do you get half the money back?
You weren't racing that year, were you?
No. Thankfully.
Yeah. Imagine that. I've just paid 15,000
euros. Yeah, for half a race for the 12 hours of Dubai.
And I've qualified. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's what the lady did. She went and talked to...
I think they did call it a force majeure that year, you know, so, yeah. You know, act of God type thing.
Yeah.
So there was no refunds, you know.
Jeez. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough on the Autodrome as well, right? No, you can't predict that kind of stuff.
No,
we were actually there. Well, me and Ahmed were in... Where were we? Leeward, and they cancelled Leeward, didn't they? We got the way to Leeward and they stopped. Then we came back and I think the race was under red flags by the time we got back. And then I got a phone call in the morning from Bert going... I think you need to, at 5 a.m., I think you need to come and remove your cars. We can't get out of the racetrack and the home straight is flooded.
My car got stuck there.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, as a spectacle, I definitely it's not known about. I think Dubai's a strange place, right? If you're living in the marina, you're probably just, you know, head under a rock, really. Like
You can hear it all the way to JVC, though.
Yeah, it does. Sound travels, sure.
And those things aren't quiet.
But as a family thing as well, being if you got, you know, it's way more. I think it's more of a spectacle than it used to be. The Autodrome.
It was gaining a lot of momentum. Obviously, this year slowed things down because there was no spectators allowed. But it was certainly gaining a lot of momentum over the last few years.
Yeah.
To the point where one year there was 100 cars on the grid. Now that was a bit dangerous, to be honest. It was too many. So I think from then onwards it's sort of winded down to 60-70, that sort of level. But it's really quite a spectacle to see those 60 or 70 cars going off the line at the start.
But it is cool because I think like endurance is kind of motorsport. If you bring it down, it's not even Formula One. It feels like endurance is the thing that makes motorsport. Right, it's the race. It's the if I had to put it down to anything, and it's on track, it is endurance racing that kind of is the
pinnacle. I'm not.
Yeah, the pinnacle, I'd say. Because again, if you look at Le Mans, 24 Hour is the biggest race of the world. If it outside of Formula
One, you've raced both, right? So what would you choose?
You've done Le Mans.
No, as in, okay.
We're talking about just started with that
sprint race versus like endurance.
Sure. Yeah.
Look, there's a lot of stress around the endurance racing. You do. It's a long time. To be concentrating on one thing, and it really can take it out of you, and it's pretty scary, especially in the Autodrome, because most of the track is in darkness, and if you're a slower car, the speed differential is huge, can be 100 kilometers difference into braking zone, for example. So it definitely,
and accidents hurt, don't they?
Like, exactly. Yeah. It does take it out of you, and sometimes you sort of do say, well, why the hell am I doing this, you know? Whereas the sprint racing is more fun.
Yeah,
it's, you know, one day, possibly one day, the whole thing is wrapped up in one day, and you get to chill out between the races, each race half an hour, this type of thing. I think this year you're going to see a change in the motorsport scene here, because there have been a lot of new Clios bought.
Yeah.
I think there's 10 or 11 new Clios coming to the race series, and that's going to make it pretty competitive.
So you're going to get a Clio now? Or are you in the same class?
No, I'm not. No. But that's something that I think has been missing for a long time here, where they're introducing a new series within a series. And I think also one of the frustrations we have, or I certainly have had over the years, is that it's very difficult to get any interest from the manufacturers. So, for example...
Oh, for them to see value in it, basically.
Honda never saw any value in us racing a Honda.
So we're talking local,
you know,
Honda.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas maybe Renault now, I think, will start to get interested. I mean, Renault is not a huge brand.
But they've got two brands, right? Renault Sport and then Renault. Because I can see the value in Renault Sport. Because the reason I buy a Clio is because it's not homologated, but it's related to the one that's on the track, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Especially with the flappies now, because you only get it with flappy paddles, right?
So I think now, you know, manufacturers such as Renault should really jump on the bandwagon now and push their own brand, help the drivers, help the series, and encourage it. And that's really, to be honest with you, people always ask me, what's the best car to buy? And the reality is, it's a Clio.
And we were talking to Hashim about this the other night, about the experiences of the Autodrome. Like, I think the best value for money one is a Clio.
Definitely.
It's just good fun. It's a proper race car as well. Like,
And people, it's not crazy fast, because none of us are Michael.
People don't see it that way. They think, you know, oh, we want to try the Ferrari experience or the McLaren experience and this type of thing. But the reality is you will have much more fun
In the Clio
with the sequential gearbox and the real whine and hardcore noise of a race car. You're much more fun.
Because I think the problem is that normal civilians will go, I've done this experience. The first question you get asked after doing is like, how fast do you go? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And again, that's not the point. But that's the first thing. You're like, oh, you went to, you do, oh, how fast you get up to? That's not the point.
So, another thing I want to touch on, I might have been dreaming. I definitely would have been pissed at the time. I was on a flight, and I'm sure I watched was it a documentary? Or
Yes.
Yeah,
there we go.
So, where the hell did that come from? Because that kind of leads into sponsorship from this region, right? Like, did you do that off your own back to gain more sponsorship, or?
It was part, I mean, yes.
Maybe explain what it was as well.
I had an idea at the time to make a short kind of fly on the wall documentary based on around the 24 hours. I'd done research at the time and I couldn't find anything really interesting on YouTube. Mm. I found like Audi had done one or someone else had done one, but it wasn't very interesting. It wasn't like, you know, normal people. You know, how's it going, what happens, this type of thing. So I had this idea. I spoke to someone locally here, Noel, actually, you know. And
Noel said, Edden. This
idea. I want to do it. What do you think? So he put me in touch with Kiss Productions at the time, who are a really good bunch of guys. And they said initially, look, we can do it. 26 minutes, I think, something like that.
It should have been 24 minutes,
because this fits.
If you've missed 24 minutes or 24 hours, then you shouldn't be in marketing.
Because this fits into a 30-minute slot in a TV program,
right,
with advertisement in between. Mm. So I said, okay, fine, let's do that. So we started the process. They got into the nitty-gritty of each of our lives in terms of just getting to know us, and then the garage and the building of the car and all that kind of stuff. And then at one point during the race, one of the guys said to me, look, do you have some parts lying around or something? Can we pretend that something broke, because we're afraid it's going to be a bit boring. 5 minutes later, the engine blew. And then over the course of
Was this oil starvation on turn three by any chance?
Overheating.
Yeah, okay.
And over the course of the 24 hours, or as much of it as we could sustain, we blew three engines. And we had a crash. So it was really...
So you found drama?
We found some drama. And I still blame Selim for that. But so then they finished this. I thought, well, that's a waste of time.
Yeah.
You know? And then they came back to me maybe 3-4 months later or something. Said, okay, we've done this film or video. I said, okay. They said, but it's really good. I said, really? And they said, yeah, it's, I think, 75 minutes long, something like that. six, something like that. So they made two versions. One was like 56, other one is 72 or 75, something like that. They sold it to, what do you call it, Prime?
Yeah.
It was on Emirates Airline for a long time.
That's where I saw it.
It's been sold to various random countries around the world, like Discovery Latin America or something. We're all speaking Spanish. It's it's interesting. I never got a single penny for it because of some agreement that I didn't sign. But
then, did you get anything sponsorship, or like, how do you
look? How I pushed it at the start was, I said to our sponsors, I'm going to make this, and then you can use that. You can, you know, showcase your brand on various levels. And they were all excited about that, and some of them were involved in it, like Patrick.
I can remember you going to someone's office with a contract.
Yeah, Patrick McKinney of BAM is in it. The general manager from Rotana is in it. You know, we had...
Because Rotana's in motorsport. I've seen a few of their sponsored guys.
Rotana were very good to us, to be honest. They provided us all the catering at the 24 Hours event.
Because they had Z3s, didn't they? GT3 Z3s. With the Rotana sponsorship. I've seen a few of them.
Could be, yes. Even I think there's some sponsorship on some of the Dragon cars with Rotana also. I don't know the arrangement, but they were really good to us, you know, I have to say.
So let's talk sponsorship as well. Because to me, with it being such a small region, I'd presume that it's really hard to get any kind of sponsorship support locally.
I think it depends. You have to approach sponsorship in a strategic way. You have to sell a case, and you have to make it attractive, and you have to follow through with it. So whatever way you promise what you're going to do, you have to make sure that you deliver it. So, I mean, and a sponsorship doesn't have to be monetary. It can be, as I mentioned, it can be catering support.
Yeah.
It can be fluids for your car. It can be
fluids for people.
Garage support. It can be team members providing their time. There's various different ways, and you can offset it in various different ways. You don't have to just put a sticker on the side of your car. You know, you can recommend people to go to the guards that's looking after your car, but also you always have to have some synergy. So, for example, if you have a Honda, there's no point in trying to do a deal with a German car specialist garage. You know, you have to.
Don't you have DT on the side of the Audi, right?
Yes.
Yeah, not on the Honda.
They were also on the Honda, but you know, from their perspective, an Audi RS3 LMS parked in their garage is more appealing from their customer client base. For example, than a Honda doesn't gel with their business, you know.
Yeah.
So the other one piece of advice I would give anyone who is trying to go for sponsorship is, if you don't know the owner of the company or you don't know the CEO, don't waste your time.
Yeah. Sell it high.
Yeah.
It's the only way, and it has to be from friendship, from, you know, be it playing golf together, be it drinking together, be it
relationship
building. That's the main basis upon which you can achieve it.
One thing you can offer as well is that, like, you get front row seat to the biggest circus in town. Do you know what I mean? You come here, like, hospitality is probably one of the biggest things you get in return, because they can go to their C-suite and say, come down, we have a car we're sponsoring.
Well, I've been in and your suite, like, ain't that fantastic? Used the car culture tent last year, but still you're a part of it. I get it.
We're on a budget last year, like,
and again, for these boys who have a day job.
Hey, we officially, well, not officially, but unofficially, we had a sticker on the car. So
yeah, on them, one of the Audis, right? On Noel's car.
Well, no, on your car last year. Yeah, yeah. So, but it is, I guess. But I guess if you're like the director of the Rotano, you're not gonna.
Also, that person has to have an interest level. If they have an interest in it, then they're more likely to be supportive.
It's an easier sell, right?
Exactly.
Would you say you found it easy to gain sponsorship, though?
In the past, reasonably easy. But, you know, it just depends, again. But we were very focused on it. We were pushing it very highly at that point in time. You know, we had time. It depends on your family commitments also. If you're single, if you're, you know, you have time to put a lot of energy into it. It depends.
Married to motorsport.
At that time.
So now life has shifted, changed. So are you 24 hours? Is it done now? Because you raced last year, right? So
I don't plan to do it this year, but I say that every year. Yeah. So
usually, since I've known you over the last, I think maybe 3-4 years, I don't know how long it is, 24 hours has been pretty negative.
It's a tough race, to be honest, you know, but we keep trying because you keep believing you can achieve it again, you know.
There must be some sort of addiction in it, like, I'm still
chasing the dragon almost.
I like racing. I'm trying to think if I'd ever do it. I'm not sure. I enjoyed endurance racing in karts, but 24 hours was a little bit too long. 12 hours is okay.
But 12 hours of Sebring is as long as 24 hours of Le Mans. Depends on the race as well, right? Some of these races are quite crazy, and they take it out of you. That's what I've heard, at least from an endurance perspective.
Just try staying awake for 24 hours.
No, I know, like, but, like, yeah.
You know, I've done that many a times, but not in
different
this country.
Reasons.
It's not for everyone, let's be honest, you know.
Yeah.
But, and those who do it time and time again, if you see there are a number of teams, Colin White, who races Genetis.
Yeah.
I heard he does something like 60 events a year, right? So
there's 52 weeks in a
year.
But
with different cars.
But still.
But this is somebody who is a complete stalwart of endurance racing, and you got to respect those guys. You know how they do it. I don't know. You know, for us, the preparation that goes into it to do
it's
it
the whole year,
one time
is
enough. Then to forget about it until it comes around again. You know.
So, as we're getting towards the end, I'm going to ask a question. You don't necessarily have to answer it directly, but do you know how much money you've put into racing in the UAE? Or are you allowed to say it? Because the wife might listen.
I can do a fake outro now.
Because I'm sure, like, if I'm looking at all these people that try and bull because they're living in the UAE, I'm sure it has cost you. And if you take taking time apart as well, right? That's a hell of a lot of money. It's a massive
commitment.
It's a lot
easier just to buy a Lamborghini.
Okay,
for like half a million, yeah.
Okay, you guess then, and I will tell you if you're right or not.
Hot and cold.
I really, like, I'm sure if you're taking in consideration the cost of the car and everything, you must be, it's got to be over a million dirhams, I'm sure.
I don't think so.
No?
No, I don't think so.
What do you reckon you're into the car for? I reckon, no, you've definitely, like, maybe it's because the wife's going to hear this, I'm sure.
We talk about Hurricane, Aventador.
Because there's money. Money that you don't even think, right, for preparing for stuff.
I don't know why I'm getting this from you.
This is right at the end, because you've got to leave now.
I want to tell you one story. So years ago, I was on, we were making a video, and the guy said to me, so how much does it cost to go racing? And I told him, honestly, how much it costs for a weekend.
You pick him up off the floor?
And then there was one guy who raced with us. He's Scottish. He will remain nameless. And anyway, he said to me, Jonathan, why did you tell the guy on TV how much it cost to go racing? My wife was watching that. And I said to him, well, I just told, you know, what I thought. And he said, he told his wife, well, it's because he drives a Honda. It's more expensive, you know. But I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, when you build a classic car or you build a resto mod,
you
keep the budget to a point and then you kind of forget
double
about
that three
and
times.
And you literally double that.
I know people that write it down, and like I think that's the biggest mistake in life.
Does seem a bit silly. But if you do pass away and you work out that I bought myself a Lamborghini and drove her about to JBR, it's not the same as taking part in the Dubai 24 Hour, is it?
It cost me to build that DC5 around 250,000 dirhams.
250,000 dirhams. Is that with all the spare parts and stuff?
Yeah, everything.
That's not bad. So you could well be under the threshold.
But how many hours could you get out of one of those cars? Because that's the thing I didn't realize until somebody told me that.
Is this recording?
It's not mileage.
Yeah. It is, okay.
Yeah, it's not mileage. It's hours almost in a race car,
right?
Yeah,
we calculate this pretty definitively. So, for example, that DC5 has raced around 40 hours.
What's its life like? What's its expiry time?
Hopefully, I mean, it.
Because I don't know what gets worn out. Is it like bushing?
Components, brakes wore out. So, for example, our brakes are some kind of phenomenon there. They ran for 30 hours, which nobody can believe that. And actually, they weren't worn out. The pads weren't worn out. It was the bobbins had worn out in the actual brake disc, you know, from the
flexing was, yeah.
So engine should have a rebuild every 5,000 miles.
Miles, okay.
Yeah.
That's strip it, clean it. Do you replace stuff?
That's
or
bearings.
Is it
that's bearings only.
Bearings, yes.
Yeah, so yeah. And bearings. So, but you have a constant maintenance regime.
Hmm.
We don't run bushes. All our bushes are metal.
Yeah, yeah.
So the components are all high quality. They're all race spec components. So it's not like, you know, a rubber bush is going to wear out. It doesn't wear out. And everything is upgraded. There's virtually nothing that came original on that car.
Apart from the doors, probably. You know, they're lightweight, right?
No, they're not.
They're
fiberglass, for example.
So
There's literally, the only thing I think that's original on that car is the headlights.
Door handles?
Headlights. Door handles, yeah.
There you go.
But so going back to the point of cost again, so we won't mention the prices, but you could have clearly brought a nice car with the amount of money that you've invested in, not even thinking of the
GT3,
time.
There we go.
No, let's just talk any nice car, right? Like, well
one of your favourites,
that's why. Everyone's taste is different, right? Yeah. You drive a shit Honda with a shit wing. Like,
finally.
Yeah. It took you know, like, you could have brought a nice car, but you definitely wouldn't have got the experiences, right?
The way I can sum it up is that this year we drove the Audi TCR,
yep.
Which is probably a 100,000 euro car.
Yep.
Built by Seat Sport. It's got Golf Or engine in it, and it's a fantastic machine. But to be honest, it had some gearbox problem, and then we substituted it with the Honda in the local series. And when you get back into the Honda, I much preferred it. You know?
Does it feel like a shoe that fits you almost, right?
Exactly. Now, it might be because it's less intense, you know, it's more forgiving, it's not as powerful, etc.
It's built, not bought. Exactly. And it's built for you.
It's
right?
a bit like, you know, if you want to restore a classic car, or you want to build your own car, you know, do you want to buy one that somebody else has done?
No.
Or do you want to go through the experience?
I don't know now.
Yourself,
it's you know? Nice at the other end of it.
For me, building it, fixing it, learning, you have regrets because it cost a lot and you made mistakes.
And you make mistakes, everyone does, yeah.
But, you know, this is why you put rubbers on top of pencils. You have to learn from your mistakes, you know.
So this is something you need to take from this conversation.
No, I know.
Learn from your mistakes, right?
Oh, there we go.
So we can wrap up absolutely perfect on that one.
No, actually, before we do, is there anything else you kind of want to add when you've got a platform of 20 people listening?
Mm.
Wow.
Especially at this point.
No, we did. How many did we do on the first one?
200.
I think then if I were to sum up, I would just like to say that, you know, the motorsport community here is a really good bunch of people. Yep. And everybody looks out for each other. Everybody's supportive.
Especially
when you're racing against each other.
People on the grid, right?
For example, if James was doing a six-hour event in his Honda, I will tell him, James, do you want to bring mine to the track? Park it beside yours. If something goes wrong, if you need something, you just take it off it.
Yeah.
And people have always done that over the years here and always been supportive. You tend to find that there's a genuinely good people involved here, and that's one of the things that keeps us still engaged and still involved.
Especially in the time of like social media, with attention spans being short, 24 hours is a lot of time to ask for somebody to pay attention to a race.
Well,
right?
None of your crew members are paid, right? Everyone does it out of a passion, right?
Yes, so. And that's something that's very special, I think, in this region, that you do get a collective of people who are willing to do that. Give up their time, their energy, and in some cases even spend money to do things, you know.
Yeah.
So
because it's not just the Friday.
No, it's not. Not everybody has that benefit. I mean, we've always had that because we started as a complete amateur grassroots team, and that's how it's always been, and that's how it always will be. To be honest, once it gets up, you know, I appreciate those teams who are professional and have paid. Employees and they're doing it, that's their living, shall we say, but once you get into that level it becomes super serious and it's no longer fun, I don't think, you know. It becomes really a job, and then the difficulty is that when your passion or your what you like doing becomes your everyday job, you sometimes can lose the passion. You know?
Yeah. Right there.
Sometimes. I think that's a nice one. Yeah, there you go. That's a nice way to end.
Good to end on.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening. See you on the next one. Bye.